inside story on the Ducks, the Beavers, the national recruiting scene, and high school prospects across Oregon and Southwest Washington. This is Recruiting with Andrew Nemec, the Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert players, coaches, and fans follow.
Hoo-wee.
Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.
Hello and welcome to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan. A lot to get to on today's show. Kayvon Thibodeau's performance at the Under Armour All-American game. If you didn't watch that game, we've got to talk about it. Because he comes in as the number one guy, and so there's a certain level of expectation that is pinned on him, and ESPN featured him heavily. Let's just say he didn't disappoint. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. Also, grading the last calendar year for Oregon and Oregon State, not only the seasons, but the health of the program. How'd they do in recruiting? How do they project going forward? Mike Lynch and I are going to be talking all of that, but first, the big news of the day. Bol Bol, the former five-star prospect, the number one center in the entire country, signs with Oregon. Huge deal. We talked about it on the show multiple times. 9 games into his career, he is out for the season, and his career at Oregon is likely over after suffering a foot injury. Bol Bol kind of announced his farewell, seemingly to Oregon basketball as a whole. He left it a little bit ambiguous. I guess there's still a chance, but it seems for all intent and purpose, he is done at Oregon. For as much as we covered it, I probably wrote 3 articles for every game he played, Mike Lynch. What do you think of his lasting impact at Oregon, or even is there one?
I don't think there is one. The lasting impact is he played 9 games and there was a lot of buzz, and then nothing happened because of it, because he played 9 games and got hurt. It's just that simple. It sucks because he actually showed more promise than I thought. In the first game I watched him play, I was like, ugh, this kid is awkward and he doesn't look like he belongs out there. But as he played, and against some weak competition, of course, but as he played through the non-conference slate, he was better and better and had way more of an impact than I thought he would. And then the injury happened. So I don't think there is much of a lasting impact outside of, oh, that's right, Manute Bol's son played at Oregon for 9 games.
Bill Simmons has a theory with big men and big-time prospects that you want to see them walk. And it's not, or jog down a court, either or. And they need to look fluid. And if they're a big guy particularly, and they look awkward, kind of just moving, they're going to get hurt. And I think you saw that with Greg Oden, and now we're seeing that with Bol Bol. You and I talked about the exact same thing with him as a prospect. He looks awkward, and he was productive at the Nike Hoop Summit. He almost posted a triple-double in blocks. And yet my takeaway was, he got it done. You can't argue with the production. He's obviously a rim protector, but he just doesn't look quite right. And I think those guys have a tendency to get hurt. It doesn't shock me that he got hurt. I wish him the absolute best, and you're right. He was more productive at Oregon than I anticipated in 9 games. He averaged 21 points, 9.6 rebounds, 2.7 blocks per game, and shot 52% from three-point range. You can't argue, and that wasn't shooting one or two in the whole time he was there. He was shooting several a game, 3-4 a game at least. Bol Bol was much more productive than I anticipated, and yet his career kind of ends up where I thought it would. It just didn't go the way I thought it would, in that he'd come to Oregon, I'd say, eh, by the end of it. I just thought it would be because his awkwardness kind of didn't allow him to do what, frankly, he actually was able to do on the court, and then he'd be gone after 1 year and be a late lottery pick. Instead, he looked really promising for 9 games and is going to leave and be a late lottery pick, and it's just that injuries are going to get it done. Either way, he was a guy that I thought would be a disappointment at Oregon, and it's not fair to say that because of an injury, but overall, his legacy at Oregon probably going to be a disappointment. And when you look for a comparison, kind of reminds me of Kyrie Irving, frankly. 11 games at Duke before he got hurt, averaged 17.5, 4 assists, and 3.5 rebounds. But we don't talk about Kyrie Irving. I mean, yes, it's mentioned. I mean, he had a shoe that was like his Kyrie 3 Duke shoe. But we don't talk about Kyrie as like one of the Duke guys, or a guy that changed Duke in any way.
That was going to be the example I use, is it's Kyrie Irving, but Duke has a history of bringing in great players consistently and not needing some player to build buzz in recruiting. They don't. Oregon basketball, in my opinion, does. They need those players to come in to build that buzz, to get more good players to come in. You saw it a little bit last year because you got Bol Bol and you got Lou King and you got Will Richardson as well, all in one recruiting class, which is a really good recruiting class for the Ducks. And then this coming year, it's also pretty solid. But I think you needed Bol Bol to play the whole season, get the team some national attention, get him some national attention for that to create a lasting impact for the Duck program, and now it won't.
It'll depend on how much he embraces his time at Oregon. If he makes a big deal out of it, some guys that don't play a long time, Kyrie's not a huge Duke guy. I mean, we know that he went to Duke, but he also is an Earth is Flatter guy. So, you know, you wonder about how much he was really on campus at Duke and how much knowledge he really obtained. If Bol Bol makes a point of being, you know, out there and open about, I went to Oregon, he knows tons of rappers. He's very involved in the hip hop community. There is an opportunity here for him to have a cultural impact with a lot of kids. If he succeeds in the NBA, and if he embraces his Oregon time and talks about how much fun he had at Oregon and how much he loves Dana Altman, I think there is an opportunity for Oregon to gain a recruiting boost from this. But on the flip side, Bol Bol is a one-and-done guy who went to Oregon, played just 9 games, and then when he went out, this does not look like a season. I don't think I'm going out on a limb here in saying Oregon doesn't look like a team that's going to march into March Madness and make a splash.
They don't look very good.
So people who watch Oregon are going to see him leave, or recruits that potentially considering Oregon say, man, if I'm a one and done guy and I get hurt or something happens and I need to rely on my teammates, is this what I'm surrounded by? And I think that hurts them going forward with recruits as well, in that Bol Bol gets hurt and suddenly they don't make the tournament. Maybe too reliant on a one and done guy.
Well, and I said this earlier, and it's kind of the first thing that popped into my head. And this might not be true. Obviously, this is all speculation because we're only this early in the season for Oregon. We don't know what's going to happen following with recruiting. But this, to me, reminds me of Ben Simmons at LSU Markelle Fultz at Washington. Those were one-and-done players who were the only good player on their team, only elite player on their team. And when they left, A, both of them had injury issues, and B, when they left, who went to those schools afterwards? Is LSU pulling in great recruits because Ben Simmons went there? No, they're not. So I could see that happening with Oregon. Bol Bol gets hurt. He doesn't play the rest of the season because Simmons, I think, missed the SEC tournament. I don't even think LSU made the tournament that year he was there.
Simmons didn't try through huge stretches. I mean, Simmons was a guy that you suddenly worried about. Does he care?
Right.
Will he care?
He was only
and
doing
the answer
it
was yes.
Because he had to.
He would care. He had to go to college. Bol Bol cared when his time at Oregon. He played hard. I thought he played well. I thought he was a really good player at Oregon. I thought he had potential to be the conference player of the year. Certainly belonged in that discussion. That's how good he was, which surprised me. Again, because he was so awkward. But he also perhaps got hurt because he was so awkward. I do think the infrastructure right now at Oregon is better than LSU. They made a Final Four run prior to this. They've got a great recruiting class coming in. They're involved for a number of big-time prospects in the next couple of years. I think Dana Altman is a good enough coach that it's not going to quite be an LSU situation. But at the same time, if we're just talking about the impact he has with other future one-and-done players, which I think is where you're getting at, I do expect that Bol Bol's time is not necessarily one that goes immediately in the win column for Oregon, where they say, look, Bol Bol was a one and done, came here, and look what he did. It's going to be one of those things that it's an anecdote when we talk about Dana Altman rather than the beginning of an era of Altman being able to get one and done players.
I also don't think Bol Bol is going to be much of a rah-rah Oregon guy once he gets to the NBA.
I think that's fair.
It's kind of impossible to be that when you barely spend any time on campus. And sure, you might have had a great recruiting process, and you even saw on his social media posts, I love Oregon. It was my dream school. I love Dana Altman. A, of course you're going to say that because you know you're leaving and you're not going to come back from the injury. You're not going to come back for another year. But B, do you really believe that? I don't. Maybe it's his dream school because he grew up and he liked Oregon and he liked the colors or whatever. But really?
That wasn't a part of his discussion about his recruitment when he was being recruited.
No.
Oregon wasn't the dream school until he was already there and saying farewell. It'll be interesting to see what happens with it. But I do think rather than it being the absolute, he's going to go and star and then that's the start of the one and done era for Dana Altman, I do think it probably pumps the brakes on that a little bit. And maybe Oregon now has to build Final Four type teams the way they did before, where Dillon Brooks was there for a few years, Tyler Dorsey was there for a few years, Jordan Bell. That's probably more the blueprint for Oregon than to become the next Kentucky or the Pac-12's Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina. I don't see that happening after the Bol Bol experiment.
Well, and it's a personal example for me, but because I went to Syracuse, it's close to home. Carmelo Anthony is still a staunch supporter of the Syracuse basketball program.
Right.
He built them a multi-million dollar basketball facility on campus, all of his money. He constantly reps Syracuse gear. He's always going to the games, and he was a one and done. But I guarantee you're not going to see that from Bol Bol. You're not. That's the level you need to attract recruits. But if you're rah-rah about your school after the fact, you need a Carmelo Anthony level, not what's going to happen or what Kyrie Irving did, for example.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's a great point. Under Armour All-American game on ESPN2. High expectations for Kayvon Thibodeau, the nation's number one overall prospect. Would he deliver? And today, oh my goodness, did he ever. Not only is he an elite pass rusher with a great first step, and if you watch the game, you saw that. But also, he's got a lot of moves. He's got a lot of different moves to get to the quarterback. Multiple quarterback pressures. Two of the times he came off the edge, it led to a sack. Now, he didn't get the sack, but he forces the quarterback up into the pocket, and then he is immediately sacked. Another time, quarterback tried to throw the ball away and threw an interception. Another one, a fourth quarterback pressure, led to throwing the ball, and it should have been intentional grounding. The quarterback just kind of threw it out of bounds. I don't think it made it to the line of scrimmage. He was absolutely dominant, and you saw some social media buzz about it. ESPN just centered on him. I mean, he was a focal point through the first quarter, the second quarter. They talked about him and Oregon over and over and over throughout the broadcast. I imagine that was annoying for Alabama, Florida, and Florida State. I know on the flip side, I know Oregon fans would have been annoyed to see Kayvon Thibodeau play the way he did. And they talked about how he was going to Alabama and going to be the next great pass rusher. I'm sure fan bases were annoyed with it. But what a stellar showing. He came in with so much hype, and I think delivered on all of it. And I don't say that lightly. I said Bol Bol, I thought, didn't look the part necessarily. Now, he went to Oregon and played phenomenally until he got hurt. But Kayvon Thibodeau looks like the real deal. And he generated rave reviews. He didn't have a sack. He didn't have a ton of tackles. But his ability to get to the edge with that quick step, first step, or get inside with some of the advanced moves he has as a pass rusher, changed the game. It altered the game. It is really tough as a defensive lineman to go into a big-time nationally televised game, know the spotlight is on you, and then not only deliver, but look even better than the expectations. Kayvon Thibodeau did that. I expect him to be a starter from day one and a potential big-time performer from day one. That's how good he looked. I was blown away, truly, truly blown away, and you'll see the reactions from people on social media when they grade the event. He will be considered one of the stars of this event. That's what's going to come out of this, along with Theo Weiss. Michael Johnson Jr., the Sheldon quarterback, threw a really nice touchdown pass. He looked good. He looked crisp throughout the week. But Kayvon Thibodeau, the number one guy in the country, and ESPN, I'm telling you, the whole show there, the whole game, they build him as that. They kept going back to him during live portions of the game. They had the game action, and then in a smaller box, just Thibodeau in his one-on-one matchup live. They were that confident he would look good, and he delivered a great game for him. Oregon fans, get excited. There's a lot to be excited about, not just with Kayvon Thibodeau, though. This past year has been a great year for Oregon football, particularly for the future. I know on-field results, maybe you're not thrilled with the on-field results this year, but I think you are thrilled about the future. Mike Lynch and I will grade Oregon's last calendar year. It's a pretty good grade. Next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
Five stars to unknown prospects. We cover them all. From Oregon Live, this is Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
We're ringing in the new year by grading the past calendar year for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers football programs. First up, the Oregon Ducks. Now remember, this is not just on the field. This is health of the whole program. This is recruiting. The whole dang thing, Mike Lynch. The Oregon
Ducks. That's a lot of things. It's very stressful.
It's a lot to consider.
Why am I grading at the new year? Aren't teachers on winter break?
You know what? I need your grade. The Oregon Ducks finished 9-4.
Yes, Dad.
They win their bowl game 7-6. It was awful and ugly and atrocious, and it raises some red flags about.
It was even worse than the Cheez-It Bowl.
It was so bad.
Yeah.
It was so bad. And you have to question now. You're given a month to prepare. Marcus Arroyo's very vanilla, very bland, identityless offense raises some concern about the future of that offense. And I know Oregon fan, there's some Oregon fans like, hey, they got the job done. They like to win these tough matchups. Sorry, they ran for 37 yards in the contest. If you want to be a team that controls things up front, you have to run for more than 37 yards. The offensive line is very good. They just had a receiver declare for the NFL draft in Dylan Mitchell. C.J. Verdell's a 1,000-yard rusher. You've got a quarterback in Justin Herbert who's got a potential to be a top, 5-10 pick in the NFL draft next year? All the weapons are there, and I know the receivers drop passes. I know the tight ends drop passes, and they couldn't get a lot of separation. But I'm sorry, that effort raises some red flags, and I think you have to wonder going forward about the health of the offense. But you finish 9-4, you beat Washington, you beat Oregon State, you had a loss to Stanford that probably should have been a win, and almost certainly mathematically should have been a win if you just take a knee. Back-to-back troubling losses to Washington State and Arizona where you kind of wonder what the heck happened there. But they got back on track. They signed the nation's number 5 recruiting class. And I think if you're an Oregon fan, that's where this grade maybe goes up a tick from just the on-field performances. You signed an elite recruiting class and blew USC out of the water on their own turf for some of the best prospects in the country. As we saw today at the Under Armour All-American game, Kayvon Thibodeau, the nation's number 1 overall prospect, signed with Oregon, lived up to the hype tonight. Mikael Wright looked really good, the number 1 corner in the nation. He sat out his entire senior season due to transfer rules. So there are some people who are wondering, well, how good could he really be? By all accounts, he was one of the stars of this week's practice for the Under Armour practices this week. He's going to be a big-time athlete. Sean Dollars looked the part. Jimon Eford, the Under Armour All-American outside linebacker. They also got some good offensive line talent. They're bringing in receivers. Recruiting class is very good. You've got Justin Herbert coming back for another season. He easily could have been gone. I think even with the success of the recruiting class, when you look forward, had Justin Herbert elected to leave, I think the grade, instead of going up a tick, goes down a tick. And then, again, concerns, I got to keep reiterating, concerns about the offense long term, and maybe the landing spot of Jim Leavitt. How long is he going to be there? Is this improved defense going to remain improved if Leavitt looks for another job? All of that, to me, I give him a B+. I think they should have won some games that they didn't. I think that Stanford loss hurts you. I think you got to scratch your head and wonder what happened that week, those back-to-back weeks against Washington State and Arizona, because they didn't just lose. They were embarrassed in those games. I think, again, there's concerns about the offense, but you got a great recruiting class coming in. Justin Herbert's coming back. You expect a 9 or 10 win season at least next season. I think there's a lot to be encouraged by. Mike Lynch, what say you?
I'm going to go a little lower than that. I'm just going to say a flat B, because on the field, record-wise, 8-9 wins is the high area of where I expected them to be going into this year. I was thinking anywhere from 6-8 would be a good season for Mario Cristobal to kind of come back from that weak year with Willie Taggart. And it was a bit of a rebuild after the Mark Helfrich stuff happened at the end of his tenure there. So 6-8 wins, and they got, I like to say 8. I don't like to include bowl wins and wins just because those games don't necessarily matter. So, I mean, yeah, it's a 9-win team, but it's an 8-win team.
I get what you're saying.
So that is about on par of what I expected. On the field, the defense didn't look quite as good as I thought under Jim Leavitt, but I think a lot of good talent is being infused, and that's really good with the recruiting. Offensively, is like you're mentioning, is where my biggest concern is. I know Marcus Arroyo is Mario Cristobal's guy, and he's going to probably keep him there, but they need to have some serious discussions about, A, getting rid of him, and if not that, B, tinkering with the offense in a way that makes it more explosive, because you had the best NFL prospect quarterback on your team, and he looked bad a lot of the year. There were a couple of games where he showed those flashes, and you're like, there's Justin Herbert. The Stanford game is one that I always go to, that one. That first half against Stanford, he was nearly perfect. The rest of the year, bad throws, bad play calling, kind of stagnant, boring offense. I know Penei Sewell got hurt, and the running game wasn't as explosive because Tony Brooks-James didn't really play the part you thought he would, and then you were relying on freshmen. But when you have Justin Herbert, you better make an offense that fits him because he's that good, and they didn't. So that's where I knocked them down to a B. The recruiting has been out of this world amazing. Recruiting's an A+, right? You get the number one recruit or number one, number two recruit in the country. That's A+. You on parred your record expectation for me, but man, the offense is a big concern.
Yeah.
So B.
I think that's fair. I think when you look for, you know, we talked about this staff when they came together, and as a recruiting writer, my thing is, wow, this is a great staff, because that's what I'm supposed to focus on is how does this staff recruit? But of all the coaches, you're supposed to, as a reporter, do the background and find out. Of all the coaches that Oregon brought in, behind the scenes, the one that people questioned the most and said, I'm not sure that's a great hire, was Arroyo. Yes, he had ties to Texas, but kind of at every stop he's had, people after a year or two have wondered, does he really know how to do what he's wanting to do? I mean, does he really understand football at the level he needs to? Now, I'm sure he knows football way better than I do, and I'm not trying to be an offensive coordinator. So I get readers that say, well, he knows more than you do. Great, I'm a sports reporter.
I
hope so. I just am not entirely sure how much he knows about calling an offense. I mean, he didn't set a lot of things up, doesn't have any pre-snap motion that allows Herbert to read anything. He runs the ball between the tackles constantly, doesn't like to run it to the outside. Oregon doesn't utilize a lot of slants. They throw a lot of hitches and little wide receiver bubble screens and then throw a home run ball, once a quarter? Not a lot of use of a tight end at all, and Oregon's had some talented tight ends. I know the receivers couldn't get a lot of separation. I know those receivers aren't very good. And when you look at this recruiting class, I think you kind of thank your lucky stars that there are four stars, no pun intended. There are four-star prospects potentially coming into your program that are really talented and can play right away. But I think the Arroyo thing is the dark cloud hanging over this thing. I also think it's important to take a step back a little bit because I think Oregon fan did expect 8 or 9 wins. There aren't a lot of programs that have 3 different coaches in 3 years and expect 8 or 9 wins. And I think the fact that Mario Cristobal pulled off a 9-win season with, again, 3 different coaches in 3 years, there are a lot of programs that cripples. They're done. It takes 4 or 5 years to rebuild that thing. And yes, Justin Herbert helps you fuse that together, but also that defense went from one of the worst in the nation, looking a lot like how Oregon State looked this year a few years ago, to suddenly being pretty dang good. And I think they deserve credit for that rather than saying, well, we expected 8 or 9 wins. It's like, yes, coming into the year, you expected 8 or 9 wins, but that speaks to how well Cristobal kept things together when he was hired, because usually a third coach in 3 years means things have fallen off the rails. He did a really good job of keeping them on pace for what Oregon fans anticipated from this season.
And I do think, and I'm a little surprised by this, but it's a credit to Oregon fan. I think a lot of fans are realistic about this season where they weren't in the middle after the Washington win. All of a sudden the expectations went from 7, 8, 9 wins to college football playoff, win the Pac-12. This is going to happen. And I remember in the weeks after that, in the Washington State loss and the Arizona loss, Oregon fans felt like the program was dying. And it was like this moment of, hey, slow down. Remember where the season started and what you wanted. Now recalibrate. Where are you right now? And at the end of the year, 8, 9 wins, and I've seen most Oregon fans have been very reasonable about it and saying, hey, successful season, there's some warts, obviously because the team wasn't really in the right spot it was supposed to be at, and now we move forward as a team. And I give Oregon fan credit for that because I'm in the middle of the season, the expectations went bonkers.
I think Oregon fan follows recruiting pretty religiously. I mean, the page views kind of support that on Oregon Live, and the audience supports it here. It seems like people take that into consideration. So, yeah, you had an 8 or 9 win season, but everybody's coming back, and, oh, yeah, you landed the nation's number one recruit in the number 5 recruiting class in the country, and you ended it on a bowl win. And you can call that win ugly. God knows it was. But you ended with a bowl win. You've got a great recruiting class coming in. Kayvon Thibodeau is going to come in and should be a pretty good player right away. Justin Herbert's coming back. And I think that's where it's coming from, is you ended with some real positives. You kicked the heck out of your rival Oregon State. The one thing I think is interesting to go back and look at is if Washington makes that field goal at the end of regulation, I don't think Kayvon Thibodeau is blown away by his official visit because that atmosphere was just insane after they won. So say Kayvon Thibodeau doesn't go to Oregon in part because he doesn't have a great experience because Oregon loses to Washington. So give him the number 10 recruiting class in the nation or number 9 recruiting class in the nation and a loss to Washington, and we may be talking about a very different grade with very different expectations going forward, different results for this coaching staff and where they're going to be. And instead, everybody's really happy because of a missed field goal by a kicker. I do think it would be interesting if I could change one play on this season. Even instead of giving them the Stanford win, I'd be interested to see where this program would have been had they lost to Washington. I think things look pretty different.
They do, but again, that would be the same thing we're talking about. They'd have a 7-win season or an 8-win season if you win the bowl game instead of 9. And sure, you lost to Washington, and that sucks, and maybe you don't get Thibodeau because of that, but I don't know if it changes it that much. It might be a B-minus, not a B, because you still did what most Oregon fans expected the team to do this year. I understand the rivalry aspect of it, but if you're looking at it objectively, I'm not sure how much that changes.
I get what you're saying. That's fair. I think going forward in next year, what merits an A? I mean, this is another point that's interesting to me is I think if you hit repeat on this season, next season, and you go 9-4, squeak out a win in the Red Box Bowl, and have a great top 10 recruiting class, I think fans are really, really disappointed.
That would be silly to be disappointed by that.
Man, I think when you return Justin Herbert and you return as many starters as they do, I think Oregon fan expects, maybe you want to include the bowl win in this, a 10-win season kind of or else.
No, I know, but to me that's outrageous because if you're going to be a 10-plus win team every year, you're one of the top teams in the country every year.
But I don't think you're saying you're going to be a 10-plus win team every year. I think you're saying when you've got a quarterback who's supposed to be a first-round pick and you return this many starters and you've got the table this well set, you better win 10 games on this year, because if you don't win 10 games next year, you're not winning 10 games the year after that or the year after that, probably, because it's going to be very hard to get that level of production out of Justin Herbert.
What's the expectation going to be for even after Herbert leaves? Oh, well, Tyler Shuck's been in the system for a couple of years, 10 more wins, they're going. You know, it's a fan thing. It's a fanatic thing.
Oh, I disagree. I don't think fans will say after Herbert leaves that they have to win 10 games again this year or else. Oregon next year needs to win 10 games for that to be a good season. I think that's fair. The year after that, I don't necessarily think Oregon fans are going to say, yeah, they better win 10 games because Justin Herbert will be gone.
And what I do say, though, about what would make an A, even if it was a similar kind of season, is if the offense looks better. That's what's holding back from an A for me this year, is the offense looked bad. So if the offense performed, even if they still won the same games and it was the same results, if the offense just looked better and you had hope that moving forward it would be the same in terms of being good, I think that would upgrade it to an A, to answer your original question.
That's fair. We're talking about A's right now and B's. I think we need to dip a little bit lower to talk about Oregon State. We will do that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on Tending the Fan. Here's Mike with SportsCenter.
No
SportsCenter.
This is where it happens. Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick, featuring Oregon Live and Oregonian recruiting expert Andrew Nimmick on 1080 The Fan.
Going over the grades of the past calendar year for the Oregon Ducks and Oregon State Beavers, we gave Oregon a B from Mike Lynch, a B-plus from me. Going into Oregon State, again, health of the program, recruiting, general energy, general vibe around the program, the whole deal, not just the on-field results. The Oregon State Beavers go 2-10. The offense looked good at times. In fact, the offense looked really good at times, and then in some big games struggled. And then the defense looked awful and clearly regressed, which was a little bit of a surprise, frankly. I thought you couldn't do much worse than they did 2 years ago defensively, similar to what Oregon looked like. Was it 3 years ago now that their defense was one of the worst in the nation? Oregon State regressed, and that defense couldn't stop anybody. That's a negative. Jermar Jefferson emerged as one of the Pac-12's best running backs as a true freshman. That is definitely exciting. In terms of in-state recruiting, I thought Oregon State did a really nice job of reinvigorating in-state recruiting. They got 4 or 5 big-time in-state recruiting talents that had other offers. I thought landing Musgrave, the tight end out of Bend, was huge. Luke Musgrave picked Oregon State over Oregon and looks like the no-doubt on-film headliner of this class. Omar Spates, the Crescent Valley High School standout, is a 3-star/4-star linebacker defensive end. He's a versatile piece. I like what he brings to the table. Corey Stover chose Oregon State over Cal. Those are all good things. But then we look at recruiting. And a 2-10 season, you have a 2-10 season, you say, you know, I'd like recruiting to look good. And while it did with in-state recruits, it was really bad outside the state of Oregon. I had another writer who writes for a team site say there is no evidence, there's no statistical data that backs up that this is the worst recruiting class in Oregon State history, something that I've claimed on 1080 before. And I just want to give this to you. I went back and looked, and Oregon State on 24/7 Sports has finished 69th in the country twice. That's their lowest ever performance nationally in the recruiting team rankings. That's this year and last year. And this year's class has fewer points. So it's tied for the lowest ever rated class with last year.
When did the ratings start? Do you know?
They date back, I'm glad you said it, they date back to 2000.
Okay.
So they don't have real statistical data prior to 2000. So since 2000, this is the tied for lowest recruiting class in Oregon State history. It's tied with last year's group, but they have significantly fewer points in the overall class by several hundred because it's a smaller class. According to Rivals, it's also tied for the 69th lowest rated, or the 69th class in the nation. That is tied with the class of 2015. In 2015, Oregon State finished tied with Purdue at 69th/70th in the country with 1,065 points. This year's class is also ranked 69th, and they only have 900 points. So they're over 100 points fewer in the class than the class of 2015. So according to both Rivals and 24/7, it is tied for the lowest, but the asterisk being fewer points. So the worst recruiting class in program history on both 24/7 Sports and Rivals. That can happen. If you're going to come in and inherit a program that's 2-10, you've got to have better than the worst recruiting class in program history. I've said this. Usually, the results of a recruiting class are based mostly on last year's on-field performance. Your momentum stalls out. Juniors don't want to visit. By the time they come become seniors, they're starting to trim their lists as juniors. Who is worth visiting? Who is not? Oregon State had three coaches last season. And because of that, there were a lot of good juniors on the West Coast who said, I will look elsewhere. It really stalled out recruiting. I expect them to jump up and get better. But this was the worst recruiting class in program history, according to both Rivals and 24/7 Sports, and you finished 2-10. That hurts.
And just for reference, for those who are saying, oh, what does 69th mean? Here are the teams, I'm just on 24/7, around Oregon State right now, who, by the way, 68th on 24/7 at this very second.
Ah, so it somebody lost a commit or it adjusted. So change a little bit.
Just going to go from 62 down to the Beavs. 62, Rutgers. 63, SMU. 64, North Texas. 65, Louisiana Lafayette. 66, South Florida. 67, East Carolina. 68, Oregon State. Those are
Oregon State has that bad tells you schools. Where they're at. Yeah. Thank you for doing that, by the way. Oregon State's never been a big-time recruiter. Let's be honest, let's be real here. They've had some classes that on paper have not lived up to snuff in the last few years in the Pac-12 conference. They're not a big-time recruiter. So in the last 18 years, this is the worst on-paper group they've brought in. And you can say second worst now that they moved up to 68. I'm okay with that. It's still fewer points. So if you go by points, it's still the worst. But that's okay. I'm fine with saying one of the worst. The problem here is 68th, 69th falls in line with the North Texases and Louisiana Lafayette's and South Florida's of the world. That's not where you want to be to compete in the Pac-12. That's a real problem. Now, Oregon State fan also wants to point to their transfers, and I think that's important. Nathan Eldridge, the guy they're bringing in at center, is a previous all-conference performer at center. That helps. They're bringing in some really good transfers.
They're the quarterback, too. Gebbia or Jebbia?
Tristan Jebbia, the quarterback from Nebraska. Tyjon Lindsey, the previous five-star wide receiver at one point, dropped down to a four-star from Nebraska. Avery Roberts, a four-star linebacker in the class of 2017. And Addison Gums, a four-star defensive end in the class of 2017. All four of those guys were rated as top 10 recruits nationally at their position in the class of 2017. But a lot of Oregon State fans want to count those guys as being that ranking now. So let's insert them in now. And man, we got the number 9 quarterback in the nation. Recruiting rankings are a snapshot, and they're very fluid. They change all the time. So if we go from the class of 2017 and we fast forward 2 years, and you're saying to me now, well, we got the number 9 quarterback in the country from the class of 2017, that may be true retroactively with how he was rated before, But as of right now, the kid who you would say now is the number 9 quarterback in the country from the class of 2017, he's starting and earning all conference honors. The number 5 or 6 receiver in the country, which is right around where Tyjon Lindsey was rated when he came out, 8, 9, somewhere in there, a top 10 receiver in the country. The guy who's the number 10 receiver in the country right now from the high school class of 2017 is an all-conference performer. So you can't just insert those guys in and say they got 4 four-star prospects who are top 10 prospects nationally at their position. It doesn't work like that. Those guys transferred in part because they couldn't get playing time at Nebraska. They've got the pedigree, and I think they'll help. I think Tristan Jebbia will come in and potentially start right away. I think Tyjon Lindsey provides a lot of speed at that slot receiver position for Oregon State. I think Avery Roberts helps you at the linebacker spot. And I think Addison Gums, the transfer from Oklahoma, should start at defensive end. But if you want to plug those guys in and say, well, we're going to get 4-star top 10 production out of these kids nationally, it's not how it's going to work. So I think before people insert those guys in and say, those guys should be inserted in and we have a top 35 class nationally, if you give us 4 top 10 guys nationally at their positions, you have to say, those guys aren't considered that anymore. They're guys who have had that stop and struggled a little bit to find a fit. I give Oregon State a D+. And I think that's fair. You finish 2-10 with a miserable defense, an offense that I'm excited about, and a recruiting class that's going to bring in some transfers that should help you right away. I'm interested to see what happens in year 2 of the Jonathan Smith era. Year 1, to be honest, I expected a little more progress defensively. I'm surprised at how well they performed offensively, and I was disappointed overall in the recruiting effort from Oregon State. They get a D+.
I am also giving them a D+ because of the offense. That's why I'm giving them a higher grade than, frankly, an F. Because the offense showed a lot of promise, and I was really excited to see Jamar Jefferson play really well. And with the weird situation at quarterback with multiple guys coming in and playing, they still were able to score no matter what, almost every single game. And I think you can give Jonathan Smith a lot of credit for that. You saw Washington take a huge step back offensively when he left. He was that much of an impact on Jake Browning and the offense up there that I think you can say that's a really, really big positive. But the recruiting is atrocious. Really, really bad for a Pac-12 school that wants to be a competitive school. And the record was atrocious. So how else would you give them anything low or higher than a D+?
And an Oregon State fan, I understand wanting to spin the transfers as being like, hey, we're getting the number 8 quarterback in the nation. I don't think you can do that anymore. And I don't think that's being biased or unfair. I imagine that you wouldn't consider Tristan Jebbia the number 8 sophomore college quarterback in the country. I can't imagine doing it that way. I don't think that makes sense.
And someone texted in and asked, then how do you count JUCO transfers? And you'll know the answer more than me, but my guess is, well, because they played last year at a junior college and there's a rating system for them, whereas the guys who transferred sat on the bench and didn't play at all and then left.
It is impossible. It is impossible to ask recruiting services, and I don't have to do this, so this isn't part of my deal, but you know, I think recruiting services generally do a pretty decent job. Junior college is tough enough, and every guy on the team is a prospect. Imagine having to re-rank every kid nationally as a prospect, as a recruit prospect every year. That's what you'd have to do, because you have to be prepared to rank them all. They have to be ranked. And to rank them, you have to rank them against their equals, which would be guys at Alabama and Oregon and in for their respective classes. So you'd have to recruiting rank every kid on the off chance he transfers. You can't do it. And is there really any value there? The number of bodies you'd have to have on each campus to rank them accurately to do it. And then would there really be an audience for that? Like, hey, now Justin Herbert's a 5-star and the number 3. I just don't think that makes sense. That's why, because every kid at a junior college is currently a prospect. They're going to go somewhere. Every high school kid, you don't have to rank. You only have to rank the best ones and their prospects. You can't rank every college kid on the off chance he elects to transfers and where he would fit. It's just too much to ask of those guys. I want to talk about social media meanness with recruits, with young teenagers, and in general within fan bases. We'll talk about that next on Recruiting with Andrew Nimmick on Tending the Fan. Social media meanness and dealing with teenagers. I wanted to broach this subject because of a story I saw recently. Canadian World Junior captain Max Comtois in a hockey Match? Game? I watch so little hockey. What is it?
It's a game.
It's a game? It can... The hockey match?
I'm sure you could say match and get away with it too, but it's, you know, it's a game of hockey.
We might have lost a hockey listener too. Anyway, he missed a penalty shot.
Yes, the hockey listener that really wants to hear football recruiting news.
In overtime, and Canada was expected on the national stage for the junior world championships was expected to be a contender and maybe even the favorite. Instead, they get bounced before the semis on a Max Comtois missed shot. It was 1-1. Penalties, generally speaking, I guess, in hockey terms, go in. I imagine it's like soccer. He missed it and then just got hammered on social media. It's the World Juniors, by the way. We're not talking about a 25-year-old professional. We're talking about a young kid. And government officials in Canada have come out. His agent, he has released a thing about anti-bullying on social media. And you see this in recruiting. And I guess if we want to call this just a disclaimer or something here, I know people are passionate about recruiting who listen to this show. And I just want to be clear that I often will tweet out the handles of kids. You can follow them. You can not follow them for both Oregon State and Oregon. Do not directly link or at them and criticize them and say crazy things about their decision. Kayvon Thibodeau got a lot of that. He doesn't want to come to the SEC because he can't handle it. He can't handle this level of football, so he's got to go to the finesse Pac-12. Don't do that stuff. Just don't. If I see it, I block it. And people think I have a hair trigger with blocking people. I know Oregon State fan feels that way. I have a pretty simple rule, and it's a pretty low bar. If you cuss at me or you cuss at a high school kid in a tweet, I block you. If you say I made up a report because you don't like it, like do the whole fake news thing on something that I've reported with quotes, I block you. It's not because it bothers me. It doesn't bother me at all. Most of the time, that stuff is, I actually kind of laugh at, and then it's like, what? You can read my stuff somewhere else. Go to Oregon Live, listen to me on 1080, but you lose the right to have that one-on-one interaction with me if you can't be respectful. And you don't owe me treating me like I'm some, you know, demigod or anything. Just be respectful. Don't cuss at me. Don't call me a liar. Don't call me names, or I block you. And I'm happy to have you as a reader, but I don't want to hear what you have to say directly because you can't be nice. It feels like a pretty simple thing. And on social media, we're like, well, you know, how many people have been blocked by Nittmick? Don't cuss at me. I mean, this seems not that complicated. Again, doesn't bother me. I just, that's my bar. And I wanted to address it at some point because of the Max Comtois thing. Also, if you cuss at a recruit and I see it and it's an Oregon or Oregon State guy, you get blocked from me as well. I don't want to see you criticizing recruits. Again, there are other platforms to find me, but you've lost the right to talk to me on Twitter because you can't handle yourself in a respectful manner. Is that too low? Is that too high a bar in today's society?
I mean, probably, because on social media, it's kind of insane. I don't deal with a lot of this. I've seen some of the stuff that you deal with, and I literally kind of shake my head in awe that people would go out of their way to say things to you that they say to you just because you reported something they don't like. It's very strange. It's a strange thing that happens, and it's not just to you. It's other people who are writers and reporters get all sorts of nasty stuff said to them all the time. I don't understand it.
Women get called unholy things.
Oh, I've seen
it's
that.
It's crazy.
Too,
yeah. And it's, they can just tweet any report and it's like, go. I mean, the tamer ones are like, get back in the kitchen.
Right.
And it's like, real, like, this is where we're at.
We're in a world of trolls where people don't actually believe these things, but they want to say them to get a reaction because they want a reaction for whatever reason. And then we live in a world with a lot of really messed up opinions that now people all have a voice because they've got their social media. So
I think the one that bugs me the most is probably right now is Oregon State fan being upset that I think the recruiting class isn't very good and being really mad about it. It's my job to report the news. If they finish 11th or 12th in the Pac-12, and by the way, the Pac-12 got dismantled. Was it Yahoo Sports? Was it Dan Wetzel? Somebody, one of the prominent national writers, wrote an article about Pac-12 recruiting just being an abomination. I mean, they were so far behind the Big Ten, the Big 12, the ACC, the SEC, in terms of number of big-time prospects in the conference. And it's true. You can look at it and see that. And Oregon State in that conference that was blasted nationally finished 11th or 12th and had their lowest rated recruiting class in program hit. I'm just reporting it. I'm not ranking them. I'm not telling you what. It's just the facts. And to have people say, well, that's biased. I mean, I didn't pick Oregon to finish 5th. I didn't pick Oregon State to end up 69th. It's the way it is. So disclaimer, be kind to each other on social media and be kind to high school kids. They're high school kids.
Be kind to everybody in person too, right? Like just be a nice person.
I like that.
You don't need to narrow it just to social media.
It's true. But the social media stuff really bugs me. If a guy doesn't pick your school in the next couple weeks in the late signing period, don't attack them. Don't call them names. They're high school kids. They're going to class. They're dealing with what clothes am I going to wear so I don't get bullied. They're dealing with trying to get A's, trying to get B's in their classes. Just chill out. Be nice to each other. And welcome to the new year. Thank you, as always, for listening to Recruiting with Andrew Nemec on 1080 The Fan.